to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's radio program, the Political Cesspool Radio Show. I'm your host, James Edwards. Happy Halloween once again, everyone. Happy Halloween. It is October 31st, 2009, as I sit here inside the studio of AM 1380, WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, as we transmit out via satellite to our affiliate stations on the Liberty News Radio Network, to our internet audience at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and perhaps even to those tuned in on the phone tonight via the Liberty News Wire. Thank you for tuning in and spending a part of your Halloween evening with us. I tell you, everyone else in the Political Cesspool staff is enjoying Halloween tonight, Halloween festivities with their family. I was able to twist Keith's arm long enough to get him in here for an hour with me, but not so much for the rest of my loafing staff, Bill Rowland, Eddie Miller, Winston Smith, all AWOL tonight, and here I am eating candy corn by myself hosting this award-winning show. But you know what? I wouldn't, there's not a place I'd rather be, Halloween night or any night, than right here with you, our family of listeners in the Political Cesspool. Remember, since it is Halloween, if you want to treat the Political Cesspool, this is a listener-supported program. Go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. You can make a donation tonight, a little Halloween gift. We'll take that over candy any day. And we'll thank you for allowing our work to continue as we head into our sixth year. Last week was our five-year anniversary show. A lot of fun it was. And now we're back into business this Halloween night, beginning, kicking off what will be our sixth year on the radio. And how about Keith Alexander? Great first hour tonight. We are blessed to have him and everyone else on our staff. We are the best because I work with the best, and I'll never forget it. But now I'm going to be obviously solo this hour. We don't have any guests for this evening, but I do have a lot of stories to share with you, and the first of which tonight comes from the city of St. Louis, specifically East St. Louis, which is one of the filthiest, nastiest, most dangerous places in America. I think it's like 99% non-white, of course. Now, I can't imagine why a European-American would want to be the police chief in East St. Louis, but apparently one or two had considered it. But according to a lawsuit, and if you didn't pay very close attention, you would have missed this, and thankfully there is a show such as ours that brings stories like this to your attention. What an egregious example of, well, I can't think of a better word than racism. What an egregious example of anti-white racism is this. According to a lawsuit filed in St. Louis, the black mayor said, and I quote, a direct quote, "St. Louis isn't ready to hire a white police chief," end quote. Now, if you've been following the news in St. Louis, you'll know that they'll hire black police officers with outstanding warrants for battery, but a white chief would be beyond the pale, so says the mayor of East St. Louis. Let me be equally clear as I was in the first hour about where this show stands. I don't like discrimination against anyone. I don't like discrimination in any shape, form, or fashion. I abhor affirmative action. I abhor set-asides and quotas. I think the best person for the job should get the job. And if it is a case where a non-white or a black American or whatever is the best qualified, then let them get that position. I think that is only fair. That's the American way. Best man for the job gets the job. And if we use that standard, if we use the standard of excellence and only the standard of excellence to measure candidates for scholarships and job positions, then I think our people are going to come out on top a great deal of the time. But that's not what we have here. We have two set of rules. We have one rule where if you disqualify black candidates who are inferior to the competition, then that is cause for lawsuits. That's cause for endless howling of racism and accusations of bigotry and so on and so forth. But when you got a mayor of a black city who says this city is not going to hire a white police chief, you only hear about that on the political cesspool. Now, to their credit, these white candidates who were passed up for this position of police chief in St. Louis are filing lawsuits, but God help them to get a ruling in their favor. It just doesn't happen often. But, you know, this is what we talk about here on this program. I don't want to be a second-class citizen. I don't want my kids to have to go through, you know, situations like this where they're passed over for one reason only, because they are of European ancestry. I don't want to live in an America like that, and we fight to keep that from happening here on this program, and we're the only radio show that is doing that. And you're certainly not going to be able to count on people like Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh would be perhaps your biggest enemy in a situation like this, yet he is the one that most conservatives flock to get their daily bread, and it's a shame. And I'll tell you why Rush Limbaugh gets the big bucks. Rush Limbaugh said, and this is just a different story now, not necessarily related to the one I just shared with you from St. Louis, but I couldn't believe my ears when I heard recently that Rush Limbaugh had said that he is fed up with the Republican Party. He says, and I quote, and he's right when he says this, that the Republicans have a death wish, unquote, and that they're just as dangerous to this country as the Democrats are. Rush Limbaugh said all that. Now, you're going to think I'm making that up, but I'm not. He said the Republicans have a death wish. They're just as dangerous to America as the Democrats are. And in saying that, he was exactly right for a change. And I said, my God, Rush, it's about time. It's hard to believe that a mainstream media conservative would be talking this way. It's a real breath of fresh air, right? And maybe Rush's listeners, and we talked about this last week with Gottfried and Spencer, maybe Rush's listeners, who are so numerous they could single-handedly turn the rudder of this nation, maybe they're going to wake up and abandon the Republican Party for their betrayal of their interests for so many years. I mean, with Rush Limbaugh leading the charge, this could really turn into something big, right? Well, not exactly. Don't get your hopes up for that, because after Limbaugh declared the Republican Party, rightfully so, just as dangerous as the Democrats for America, Rush then offered his solution. And I'll give you one guess as to what it was. His solution was to keep voting Republican. Why? Because the third parties, he said, are just plain crazy. So Rush Limbaugh says all the right things, gets his audience, the ditto heads, soaped up and into a lather, and then his great advice is to keep doing the same thing that you've done for so many years that's yielded no results. Keep spinning the wheel like a rat. Keep running in that circle. And that's why the media elites, quote unquote, pay Rush Limbaugh $40 million a year. He infuses just enough truth in his broadcast to keep his audience, an audience that, you know, fundamentally would agree with everything that we say on this radio program. Rush Limbaugh gives you just enough truth and just enough animated conservative rhetoric to keep you tuned in, keep you believing that he is on your side and he's out fighting the good fight against the evil Democrats. But then when it comes time for a solution, his solution is to continue to vote Republican and do nothing different. And this is the Republican Party who, by the way, and you know this, because we've talked about it a lot, got that token Michael Steele, you know, elected Michael Steele to be the chairman of their party. This is an affirmative action flunky. Michael Steele, the same Michael Steele who just, what, a week or two ago declared his love and affinity for ACORN, the terrorist group, the left-wing radical group who are corrupt to the core. Yeah, that same ACORN, Michael Steele, the chairman, the black chairman of the Republican Party, he says they are a great organization that's doing great work for the downtrodden and minorities. And this is the chairman of the Republican Party, the same Republican Party that Rush Limbaugh wants all of his listeners to continue to vote for, even though, by his own admission, they have a death wish and are just as dangerous as the Democrats are. Why isn't Rush Limbaugh talking about this white police chief? Why isn't, you know, this candidate for the police chief there in East St. Louis, why isn't, you know, Rush Limbaugh talking about any of the very important issues, the blatant and flagrant violations of their civil rights there in East St. Louis, these white candidates who were instantly and immediately dismissed from the running to become the next police chief of that city because the black mayor said St. Louis isn't ready to hire a white police chief? Well, you know, you're never going to hear about that on the Rush Limbaugh show, or the Sean Hannity show, or the Bill O'Reilly show. Only here on the Political Cesspool, that is what separates us from everyone else. And that, as much as anything, is the reason that we have been able not only to survive, but thrive for the last 5 years. We are giving you a perspective on news that just isn't covered by any other mainstream broadcast, and we continue to grow. And we try to present our arguments as professionally as possible. We're not sensationalists, but there are stories like this out there that I think you need to have a different take on, and we give you that different take. And we are here because you support this radio program. That's the only reason we're here, because we do tell the truth. We can't get any corporate sponsors. Thank God for Liberty News Radio, but we need your support to continue to stay on. We are listener-supported. We need your donations to continue to get this message out to an ever-growing audience. And we got more news for you when we return right after this. This Halloween edition of the Political Cesspool Radio program will continue. When I come back, I'm James Edwards. I'll see you on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. It's Halloween night, and I'm happy to be with you. We're talking about old Rush Limbaugh in the last segment and how he completely misuses his power and audience so he can remain a shill and be a well-funded propagandist for the neoconservatives. And I, you know, I would tell him that. I would tell him that. But there are some people that I have just a little bit more disdain for than even Limbaugh himself. And I only dislike Rush because he knows the truth. You know, he knows the truth, and he's not going to speak it because he likes his cushy job. He wants to be a respectable conservative, you see. But there are people far worse than him that represent so-called, and they don't represent at all, but are alleged to represent the right. Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly among them. Sean Hannity is probably number one, the pompous, arrogant Sean Hannity. His shill, I don't think if his fax machine ever went down and he weren't able to receive the fax, the press releases from the Republican Party, I don't think he'd have anything to talk about. But man, you know, I was invited on the Sean Hannity show, and I turned him down. We, in the Political Cesspool, believe it or not, and we don't talk about it a lot, it's a behind-the-scenes thing, we typically turn down more interview requests than we grant. And I had a good time on CNN. CNN was fair to me. The most liberal of the broadcasting entities was the most fair. I wish I had could go back and accept the opportunity to be on Hannity, but not half as much as I wish Bill O'Reilly would have me on. And anyway, as soon as he starts giving me his nonsense, you know, his politically correct jargon that you would expect, I would, you know, you gotta have a street fighter mentality. I don't mind going into the gutter against these criminals, and you know, you gotta hit them hard. You see, that's another thing that inhibits our people is that we have this sense to play fair. Now, I'm not talking about going out there and being thugs or vandals or doing anything illegal, but hit them where it hurts, you know, embarrass them as they try to embarrass us, but the only difference is when Bill O'Reilly or Hannity or any of these people that would interview me would try to discredit me for the things that are truth and truthful and righteous, I would hit them right where it hurts. Why has no one in the last 5 years brought up the fact that Bill O'Reilly was the target of a sexual harassment case? You know, he was talking dirty to that, you know, overweight, ugly intern of his. You know, and if Bill started giving me his nonsense, I would say, well, you know what, Bill? At least I have good taste in women. And I'm not talking dirty to the people who work for my program, you know, like you did with that, what was her name, Andrea McCriss, you know. You got to go back and read this sexual harassment lawsuit that she filed and see just how perverted these people are. But anyway, I digress. That's not even what I wanted to talk about. I do want to revisit, though, a story that I was covering in the first hour with Keith. That's the story that comes right out of here in Memphis, Tennessee. And again, folks, you're going to think I'm exaggerating it. And because you might think that, I want you to go to my website, www.thepoliticalcesspool.org. Go to our website. It's on the blog. We've got the official footage from Channel 5, Action News 5, which is the NBC affiliate here in Memphis. Two toddlers died, two black toddlers, ages 3 and 2. Horrible. I wish it hadn't happened. I don't want to see anybody you know, died like that, black, white, yellow, red, green, whatever. It's a horrible situation. But we got the footage, not of their death, but of the story. two toddlers died in a fire. The aunt was concerned about her welfare card. Now, as I write on our website, I don't normally post much Memphis news, but this story was just too sickening to ignore. Two toddlers were critically injured in a fire. They both since died, as I mentioned, when their mother and their aunt left them alone to go shopping. Now, it was the second time that day that they had left the kids alone. Now, the mother was wailing for the TV cameras, as you can see on the footage there at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But the aunt went on television and told reporters that she had no regrets about leaving the two boys home alone and that she had no idea that, quote, they was going to set the house on fire like that, end quote. Then, as you can see in the footage, she began to laugh, saying she sure hopes her purse didn't burn up because her welfare card was in it. Look, I'm telling you, folks, you got to see this to believe it. And you can see it for yourself, unedited, at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And I wouldn't have brought it up if it hadn't have been for an article that appeared in the paper the next day from this black columnist that said that the reason this happened was because the middle class and the upper class had not built enough bridges into the lower class. And if we would just go and do more for the minorities, that these sort of things wouldn't have happened. Essentially, it is the white man's fault yet again that you have two neglectful relatives that do something that an animal would know not to do, leave their kids at home at 2 years old. But it's our fault. Now, if I'm guilty of all the evils that my people have been said to commit, then by using the same logic, I should get credit for all of the inventions, right? I mean, as I said in the first hour, as I sit here tonight, the leftist claims that because I am European extraction, that I am responsible for all of the evils perpetrated by whites going back hundreds of years, such as the tried and untrue examples that they always trot out in front of us. Genocide of the Native Americans didn't happen. Slavery, that wasn't our enterprise. I mean, yeah, we had a hand in it, but, you know, Keith and I covered that. European colonialism, we were evil for exploring and discovering. So, but even, okay, let's just take that at face value, though. Forget all the arguments. Forget it all. Let's just say we are responsible for all of that. Then, by way of their own logic, then we should also be responsible and then should be allowed to take credit for all of the inventions and technological advancements made by white people in the past several hundred years, which are, incidentally, enjoyed by nearly all non-whites around the world. Now, you want a list? You want a list of some of the things that we dug up that comes from the minds of Europeans? Well, that list would include, and this to go against the list of all of the evils and sins we've committed, how about the things that we've done that we get no credit for, the things that everyone enjoys and have made life what it is for everyone in the year 2009. Computers and the software associated with it. The internet, nearly all web applications, recorded music, motion pictures, television, radio, cameras, telephones, light bulbs, the automobile, rocketry, satellites, spacecraft, airplanes, skyscrapers, the telescope, the printing press, eyeglasses, contact lenses, the microwave oven, most discoveries associated with metallurgy, materials in science used such as plastics, compounds, and most other synthetics, almost all medical advancements, almost all of the life-saving pharmaceutical drugs, modern food preservatives, almost basically, I guess you could chalk up all of the scientific breakthrough over the past thousands of years, the bulk of applied mathematics, physics, chemistry, and biology, astronomy, navigation, the breaking of the human genome, DNA, microscope, laser technology, and the myriad of uses that comes with that, harnessing electricity, nuclear energy, wireless technology, air conditioning, refrigeration, agricultural techniques, government, democracy, these all came from the minds of the European people, yet any credit there? No. What are we known for? Slavery, genocide, colonialism. That's it. Well, let's set the record straight here on the cesspool and let it be said in one word. If we're guilty of the evils, then we should be credited for the good, and I'm going to take that credit right now. Thank you very much. And remember also something that we're trying to get you to remember, and this all kidding aside. People who work to destroy Western civilization are evil people. People who would have us believe that we are guilty for all the sins that have been committed throughout recorded history and of humanity are evil people. People who work to destroy Western civilization are evil people. and we should fight evil with righteousness, and we should not feel guilty, and we should not buy into their false arguments. We've got to stand up, ladies and gentlemen, be strong, be proud of who we are. Don't take this lying down anymore. I urge you, stand with us here in the political cesspool. Stand with the one radio program on mainstream AM and FM affiliates that are telling the truth and telling it like it is. Stand with us, contribute to this program, and we'll continue to make you proud. We'll continue to stand on the front lines and fight for you, and we'll be the only one. But by God, we'll do it. And we're going to take a break, and we'll do it some more right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. You know, folks, I don't know if I've mentioned it in the last 5 minutes, but I want to remind you what an honor it is to be able to host this program and bring it to you each and every week here on the Liberty News Radio Network. 5 years ago when I founded this program, I never dreamed any of this would be possible. I just wanted to do this show and make enough money to put a down payment on a home, maybe have a few bucks left over for a car, a boat, and a summer home, condo in the south. No, that's not true. I said this show because I wanted to make a difference, and I think the difference that we have made collectively far exceeds anything that I would have ever dreamed possible, and it is... I think it gets lost, even to me sometimes, the thrill that comes with being a leader and standing up for your people, and the support you've shown me and my family has been absolutely tremendous, and I never want to forget the feeling that I have each and every night that I come on with you. And even though we broadcast over 1,000 programs over the course of the last 5 years, every show is still just as thrilling to me as it was back in October of 2004 when it all began, and I hope that the next 5 years will be just as fruitful, and I hope that you will continue to enjoy our work. And let us know how we're doing. Let us know how we can improve. We're never complacent. We never feel as though we've arrived, so to speak. We want to know how we can continue to serve you and how we can continue to improve our work and improve on our ability to effect positive change for our people. And if you want to let us know how we can do just that, go to our website, email us. We want to be in contact with you. We want to develop a relationship, a personal rapport with everyone in our listening audience. And you can go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Send us an email. We'll respond. We'll read it. And we'll continue to work with you for good. I got a story here. You know, it's a story, of course, from our blog, Why Hardly Anyone in England Goes to Church Anymore. And... before I read this program, I want to remind you that this is obviously a Christian broadcast. I know each member of the hosting staff of this program is a Christian. I'm very loyal to my church, but in the church, just as the same that takes place in academia and in entertainment and so on and so forth in business, all of our institutions, I see it being taken over and moved further and further to the left. I'm radical example of this would come from a newspaper. I was having lunch with Keith Alexander and Eddie the Bombardier Miller. It was on Thursday of this week, I believe it was. And we were having lunch, and I was reading through the paper, and there as we waited on our meal, and I saw an ad there for a church. And the church said, God loves me just as I am. And it had a picture of a black woman and a white woman hugging one another as if they were married. And it was, sure enough, for a gay and lesbian church, a church that caters only to gays and lesbian. No, God doesn't love. God loves everyone, to be sure, but God hates homosexuality. Okay, I mean, the Bible says that. Anyway, so this is what we've got to put up with now. This is what I've got to put up with, you know, coming out of churches today. But over in England, just like over here, Christians in England, or at least large number of them hate anyone who doesn't hate white people and view them as reprobates. The idea that white people should be able to pursue their own political interests, just as the other races are encouraged to do, is, quote, irredeemably evil. Even more incredible is the fact that the former head of the Church of England is now denouncing Nick Griffin, who is a member of European Parliament. He's been a guest on this show twice before and after his ascension to the European Parliament, which is equivalent to being elected as a United States Senator. Anyway, the former head of the Church of England is denouncing Nick for saying on British television that Muslims have to accept that England is a British and a Christian country. Who in their right mind would disagree with the fact that England is both a British and a Christian country? But by saying that, when Nick Griffin said that, he got denounced by the former head of the Church of England. Meanwhile, former Archbishop of Canterbury, Lord Carey, urged Christians to reject the British National Party and denounce Mr. Griffin as a squalid racist, quote-unquote, who said the BBC should not have invited him on to the program Question Time, which is their biggest political affairs show in England. He was on there a week or two ago. The former head of the Church of England said it was, quote, chilling to hear Mr. Griffin claim to represent Christian Britain. Now, again, what did Nick Griffin say that got him denounced by the Archbishop of Canterbury and the former head of the Church of England? He said Muslims should accept that England is British and Christian. That's what he said. And for saying that, he got denounced as a racist and a reprobate and a man who doesn't represent Christian Britain. How dare he tell the truth? Basically, was what they were saying. Mr. Griffin had said that if Muslims wanted to stay in Britain, that they must accept it was a fundamentally British and Christian country. Lord Carey called for, quote, all Christians to stand shoulder to shoulder in rejection of Nick Griffin's notion that Christianity had anything to do with his views. I continue to read the quote from the former head of the Church of England and saying, quote, this squalid racist must not be allowed to hijack one of the world's great religions. What did he say? What did he say? Muslims should accept that England is a Christian and a British nation. That's all he said. And then this guy, Lord Carey, goes on to say that he agreed with the BBC that they were wrong to give Mr. Griffin the, quote, oxygen of publicity, even though he believed the leader had been exposed as a 21st century pipsqueak heir to Hitler. So now, if you are... Now, keep in mind, Nick Griffin has been elected to European Parliament, one of the highest governing bodies in that continent, the highest. He said that the Muslims should except that England is a British country, it is a Christian country, and he gets compared to Hitler? And the former head of the Church of England finished by saying this. The views of Nick Griffin are not simply false, they are dangerous, indeed, irredeemably evil. The former head of the Church of England said that Nick Griffin is both wrong and irredeemably evil for saying England is a Christian country. That's the head of the church. You would expect that out of some raving lunatic antichrist Marxist to say something like that. This is the head of the Church of England. That's what he had to say about Nick Griffin for saying England was a Christian country, that he is irredeemably evil. Now, that being said, I have no idea whatsoever why Christianity is dying, why the influence of Christianity is dying, why the churches are dying. They're dying because they have these false prophets in them. God help England. God help Nick Griffin. Nick Griffin is a good man. I think he could have done far better than what he did on that radio show, on that television program. It wasn't his best performance. But he's been on this show. He was on this show not 2 months ago. He's a great leader of our people. And I wish him the very best for having to put up with scumbags like this former head of the Church of England. Come on, guys. Christianity is better than that. Christianity has played such a great and remarkable role and the cultivation of our people. Europeans were the ones who carried the message of Christianity to the world. This is our faith. This is our religion. It deserves better than people like this guy who's announcing, Nick Griffin. Moving from England to South Carolina, are you ready for this? Republicans in South Carolina apologize for making disgusting and unconscionable remarks about Jews. Wait till you hear what they said. Two Republican county chairmen are in hot water for an editorial they wrote in which they made disparaging, disgusting, and unconscionable remarks about Jews. What on earth did they say? Well, you got to hear this filth for yourself, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to read it to you right after this next commercial break. Little teaser there. I'm going to read it to you. You got to wait and hear what was so, quote, disparaging, disgusting, and unconscionable, end quote, the comments that these South Carolina Republicans made about Jews. And you're probably going to be appalled when you hear it. And I'm going to read it for you right after this. And we got some good stuff forthcoming as well. Going to tell you a little bit about the origins of Halloween. It is Halloween night, and I'm happy to be here. Wouldn't be anywhere else if I was getting paid to do it. But thank you for tuning into the radio program this evening on Halloween, and we'll be back with more right after this here on the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Stay tuned for these words from our sponsors, and I'll see you on the other side to fill you in on the rest of the story.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
If I didn't tell her, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
I'm back, everybody. Don't worry about it. Here I am, and continuing where we left off, I'm not going to leave you in suspense any longer. I was sharing with you the fact that two Republican county chairmen in South Carolina were in hot water for an editorial in which they wrote that made disparaging, disgusting, and unconscionable. And these are all quoted words that used to describe their comments, disparaging, disgusting, and unconscionable remarks about Jews. Here is what they said. And I quote, "There is a saying about the Jews who are wealthy that they got that way not by watching dollars, but instead by taking care of the pennies and letting the dollars take care of themselves." That's it. That's it. That's the whole comment. So what normal people would consider a compliment, that you're frugal, that you manage your money well, being described as responsible, Jews consider that to be obscene hate. And in saying so, Jewish legislator, Democratic State Senator Joel Lawrie said that he was outraged. Quote, "The words of these key Republican leaders are disgusting, unconscionable, and represent prejudice in its purest form." He called for them to be removed from office. Disgusting and unconscionable? You know, I could only wonder where the other non-whites, such as blacks and Mexicans and homosexuals, for instance, and then the homosexuals want to be a protected minority class now, so they get lumped in there, how they constantly scream bloody murder at European Americans. And we're supposed to celebrate this kind of diversity where when you say anything, even a compliment, can lead to your career being over? You can count me out. Now, moving from South Carolina to Dallas, Texas, 48% of fifth graders in Dallas are not up to the challenge. 48%, that's half. That's 50%, basically. Let's round up. Let's be liberal for a change. You read that right. Almost half of all fifth graders in Dallas aren't skilled enough to do fifth grade work. That's the official number. Now, that's just the official number. The real number is probably much higher. And naturally, not once does the article that we link to in covering the story at thepoliticalcesspool.org, not once does the article mention the real reason that so many Dallas fifth graders aren't smart enough to do the fifth grade work. you can figure that out for yourself. But it's Halloween night. It's Halloween night. And as I said before, we normally do an elaborate Halloween-style production on the Political Cesspool to commemorate Halloween, which, let's face it, it's a very fun holiday. It's a European tradition. It's a holiday with European origins. So I'm quite frankly, amazed that it hadn't been scrapped off the calendar yet. But nevertheless, Halloween, growing up, was always my favorite holiday. Always my favorite holiday. I can remember, I trick-or-treated till I was 16 years old, for God's sake. I loved it. And I can remember some of my earliest memories of childhood, where it was dressing up, going out trick-or-treating with my grandparents, and then later my parents, and then, you know, myself and my friends. And it was just always fun for me. I don't know why it stuck so much, but it was just something that I always enjoyed doing. And then I can remember my parents. I had such great parents, still have such great parents. Thankfully, they're still with me. All of my grandparents have gone on to be with the Lord now. But my parents would always take me to Six Flags, my brother and I and a couple of friends, a couple of cousins. We'd always make this big group trip up to Six Flags in St. Louis every year to the Fright Fest there that they do to celebrate Halloween. And later on, after we got too old even for that, my cousin, I have a cousin, and he and I built our own haunted house. This was back in 2001. I was 21 years old. And we built this haunted house, and we charged admission, and we ran that for a few years. And that was just always something fun we did, just whatever we could do to commemorate Halloween. And I guess after I became an older adult, I guess it's hard to be much more of an adult than 21. But even after that, you know, I still celebrate Halloween by going out with friends and doing whatever, you know, costume parties, whatever. We had a good party last year. My wife's pregnant now, so we can't have quite as much fun as we did last year, but nevertheless, Halloween, for all of those reasons and more, always one of my favorite holidays. And I want to read just very quickly, like I said, in the past we've always done very elaborate productions on this program commemorating Halloween. If you want to go back into our archives, you can log on to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org. Go back to the program from last year on Halloween, and Eddie Miller and I did a full hour. And even the year before that, I think for the last couple of years we've done it. Art Frith would do some good Halloween music. We'd play a lot of Halloween music on the Halloween show. And Eddie and I talked about the origins of Halloween for about an hour last year and the year before. Just go to the last 2 years for the Halloween show, and it's just good stuff, fun stuff. But we had so much fun last week on the show for the anniversary special that we decided to be a little bit more serious this evening. But since it is Halloween, I want to share with you, Keith Alexander mentioned it earlier, that Western Voices World News has posted a couple of articles about Halloween on their website this evening, and you can visit them at wvwnews.net for Western Voices World News. And they talk about the origins of Halloween. Halloween, of course, has origins as an ancient Celtic festival, which was called Samhain, by the Gaels of Ireland and Scotland. This is where the traditions of Halloween originated. This is derived from the Old Irish and means roughly summer's end. A similar festival was held by the ancient Britons, known as Cailin Gaeth. The festival of Samhain celebrates the end of the lighter half of the year and the beginning of the darker half, and is sometimes regarded as the Celtic New Year. The celebration has some elements of a festival of the dead, as you might find in Mexico. The ancient Celts believed that the border between this world and the other world became thin on Halloween, allowing spirits, both harmful and harmless, to pass through. The family's ancestors were honored and invited them home, while harmful spirits were warded off. It is believed that the need to ward off harmful spirits led to the wearing of costumes and masks. Their purpose was to disguise oneself as a harmful spirit and thus avoid harm. In Scotland, the spirits were impersonated by young men dressed in white with masked, veiled, or blackened faces. Samhain, which is, of course, the ancient word for Halloween, was also a time to take stock of the food supplies and slaughter livestock for winter stores. Bonfires played a large part in the festivities, and you actually get the name bonfire from bone fire, as they would basically burn the bones of the livestock that was slaughtered. Bonfires played a large part in the Halloween festivities. of our ancient ancestors. All other fires were doused, and each home in their hearth from the bonfire was lit. The bones of the slaughtered livestock were cast into its flames, hence bonfire. Sometimes two bonfires would be built side by side, and people and their livestock would walk between them as a cleansing ritual. Another common practice for these ancient Halloween rituals was divination, which often involved the use of food and drink. The name Halloween and many of its present-day traditions derive from these old English-era festivities. And if you want to read more about the origins of Halloween, you can go, once again, to WVWnews.net. And as I've said once or twice on this program, if you want to treat the political cesspool this Halloween night, go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and donate to this listener-supported program. Your donations keep the show on the air and enable us to grow and continue the fight. Now, since it is Halloween, I have to come clean now and make a confession. I will be, in a very, very rare occurrence, I will be taking off tonight's third hour. But don't worry and don't get upset. Don't get upset. Tonight, during the third hour, we're going to be replaying, the bulk of the third hour at least, will be a replay of our very historic show from June 27th of this year, we were down in Jackson, Mississippi. We did the Political Cesspool's first ever remote broadcast at the Council of Conservative Citizens 2009 National Conference. There, we interviewed a number of luminaries, including Jared Taylor, Sam Dixon, Craig Boddicker, Dr. Tom Sunick, Gordon Baum, many more. Craig Boddicker, by the way, was interviewed recently or was talked about recently in the New York Times. Welcome to the club, Craig. And so he has made national news recently, and we're going to be replaying during tonight's third hour, the second hour of that broadcast from Jackson on June 27th of this year that features Craig Boddicker and Gordon Baum, among others. It was just a fun show. We did that show in front of a live studio audience. I think about 100 people, a little bit over 100 people were there cheering us on as we did the show before a live audience. Great show. We're going to be replaying that during this next hour as I go home to join my wife in our annual Halloween celebration. And I'll be back next week with the rest of the cast and crew. We'll be back at full strength as we go into November and another month here in the Political Cesspool Radio program. I think during the first segment of the next hour, we're going to be playing a repeat of last week's show, and then the rest of the show, and then the third hour tonight will be from that June 27th live broadcast. That's it for me tonight, live at least. Stay tuned for the third hour, a replay, and I'll be back with you next week. God bless you, everyone. God keep you. Remember to live life the way I do here in the Political Cesspool without retreat, surrender, or apology. Stay tuned for the third hour tonight right
There's
after this.
The third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.